Blog Talk Radio.
Just Blaze.
Oh, baby.
Killer. All the girls see them. Look at his kicks. Look at his car. All I say is, look, mommy, I'm no good. I'm so hood. Clap at your soul. Just sober. Then leave after it's over. Killer. I'm not your companion or your man standing. Don't hit me when you want to get rammed in. I be scrambling with lots of monsters.
Well, it is Monday once again, and here we are with Inside the Octagon. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm your host, Kalani, and we got a full call today. I got David and Leo on the line. David, what's going on with you, man?
What's going on, man? A lot of good stuff to talk about today.
Indeed, a lot of good stuff. This was a very filled weekend. We also got my man Leo on the panel with us as well. Leo, how's everything going for you today, brother?
Oh, everything's great, man. As we said last week, it was going to be a full weekend full of MMA action, so I can't wait to get into it.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was. From the start of the weekend to the end, we had combat sports going on. Obviously, Friday, we had Bellator going on in Connecticut. Saturday, we had boxing. And then Sunday, we capped it off with UFC Fight Night in Austin. And let's start there. UFC Fight Night in Austin, Texas. Donald Cowboy Cerrone riding a 3-fight losing streak, first time in his career, snaps it and gets a first-round TKO finish over Yancy Medeiros. Pretty entertaining fight for the most part. Guys were going back and forth with their two styles. Certainly was going to lead to a potential fight of the night, but it ended sooner than many people might have hoped for. I'm sure Cowboy didn't mind. Leo, what did you make of the main event between Cerrone and Medeiros?
I was completely surprised. I think I might have been underestimating Cowboy Cerrone a whole lot. I thought, maybe he's, with that fight, 3-fight losing streak, I thought maybe we're seeing an older Cowboy Cerrone and not a guy who can necessarily hang with ranked opponents. And we were seeing a Cowboy who's been talking about going back to 155, and for whatever reason, he took the fight at 170. But I completely underestimated him. I thought we weren't going to see a game Cowboy Cerrone, but I was completely wrong. He's still that forward-moving guy that we all know and love to see, and he walked away with an incredible knockout victory. And it was a fun fight for as long as it lasted. I know you and I were talking about maybe if the fight could have gone on or for a couple more seconds, we would have seen the end of the first round and seen the whatever would have happened in the second, and that would have been fun. But good on Cowboy Cerrone for getting that knockout victory. It was very impressive.
David, what about you? What did you make of the main event between Cowboy and Flying Hawaiian?
Yeah, I thought it was a great, great fight. I know a lot of people maybe would have liked to see Herb Dean let it go to the bell, and I think that it was a good stoppage. I mean, I felt like Yancy was out, but Herb Dean had it in his mind that, we're in the final seconds of the round. Do I let him continue? Do I stop the fight here? And I don't think I can blame Herb for stepping in. But it did look like when the bell rang, Yancy got up. I felt like if he had that minute between rounds to regain his composure, I feel like he would have been able to continue fighting. But besides that, I think it was a great fight. Yancy was on a 3-fight winning streak. Cowboy, on the other hand, 3-fight losing streak. I had faith in Cowboy. I know at the Palms, at Cantor, they had Cowboy as the underdog, but I was pretty confident in Cowboy. I don't think he's going to, end up losing, going on a massive losing streak. So I was impressed by Cowboy's performance. I was impressed by Yancy. I felt like they both had a great fight, and they're good friends, and they hugged each other in the middle of the fight, and I felt like it was a great fight, very entertaining. Overall, a good night of fights.
No, it was a good night of fights. And again, it almost seems like that's part of the theme. When a fight card comes up that maybe doesn't have the stars and stripes to go with it, as far as, oh my God, the big names are here, the title fights are here, they still have delivered pretty good cards. I mean, you look at the UFC Australia, even though it did have the quote-unquote interim title shot on the line there, it just seemed like it was lacking star power. That turned out to be a good fight card, and UFC Austin was no different. One of the questions that fans, media, critics, whoever, always bring up is, when it's at the end of the round, should the referee let it go? Because, you bring up a great point, David. It did look like when Medeiros like recovered, it looked like if he would have just had that extra minute in between rounds, he probably could have come out for the second. But then, like you both iterated, it was a pretty good stop for the fact that he was injured. And as Leo definitely points out very good on the show on a weekly basis, it's all about protecting the fighters inside the cage. You can't look at it and say, well, he's got 2 seconds. No, if he's out now, then he's out now. And I know that's always kind of blurring the lines, but Yancey himself didn't even try to protest the stoppage, which for the most part kind of shows you that the fighter knows that they were out of it. And it's like, okay, well, you made the call. I was out of it. Got it. But it was a very entertaining fight. And again, with their two styles, two guys who like to come forward, like to push the pace, like to stay on the feet, it definitely was going to lead to a potential fireworks going off here. And we certainly got that from Cowboy. David, I'll stick with you on this one. Cowboy, you know, we know he's one of the most popular fighters on the roster, loves to stay active. He's now 1-3 in his last four, but he has talked about going back down to 155. If you're in Cowboy Cerrone's ear, or if you're the UFC, what advice do you go with next as far as Cowboy Cerrone and where he goes from here?
Well, I feel like if he can go back down to lightweight, I feel like he's got the size and strength to be successful back at lightweight. And he was very successful in lightweight before he lost to RDA in the title fight, you know. And I felt like he was good in welterweight up until he lost to Masvidal last year. I feel like he just had a bad go of things in 2017. I'd like to see if he thinks he could make the weight at 155 today. I think in the welterweight title picture, I feel like he's kind of out of it. I don't see him getting a crack at the belt anytime soon. So if he wants to go for a belt, I think logically going down to lightweight is the thing to do. And with Khabib and Tony fighting for Conor's belt, I'm still not sure what that means exactly. But I feel like the lightweight division is going to get the ball rolling finally after that Khabib and Tony fight. I think, if they strip McGregor of the belt and turn Khabib or Tony into the undisputed champion, then, yeah, you get the ball rolling at lightweight, and I think that would be logically a better step for Cowboy if he wants to win the belt, if he wants to go after the belt. But, I don't see much of a reason for him to stay at welterweight at this point because he's so far out of the title picture.
So right now, Cowboy Cerrone is currently ranked number 11 at welterweight, and he just beat another ranked opponent, so it'd be pretty safe to assume that he's going to at least move into the top 10 at welterweight. Man, you look at the top 10 in both welterweight and lightweight, there's no walks in the parks anywhere. I mean, those are all tough fights for Cowboy Cerrone. And if you're going to have, all these insanely tough fights anyway, I think you might as well stay at welterweight and not do your body any more damage and keep cutting weight. And, we know that the risk of knockout is much greater when your body's already dehydrated and your brain doesn't have enough time to rehydrate, in 24 hours after cutting so much weight. So we have seen Cowboy be successful at welterweight. And as David said, maybe he just had a very bad year in 2017 and he's realizing that he can't be doing that to his body anymore. Just be stepping into fights 3-4 times a year. Maybe, these long layoffs are much better for Cowboy's body at this point. And we just need to see him fight, 2-3 times a year and kind of put him in there in more fun fights. I don't think at either weight class he's going to necessarily be competing for title aspirations. I think we're perfectly happy to see a Cowboy Cerrone who's just in more fun fights and with guys who are going to accentuate his style and his style of forward movement and stand of game. So I'd love to just see him, in those types of fights and not necessarily him calling out these top guys. I know you mentioning Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't think that would be a good idea at all in his career at this point. So if he can just find fun fights to have the fans be interested in tuning in, that would be much better for his career and for longevity.
Before the 3-5 losing streak he suffered last year, calling out Khabib or any of the top guys at lightweight would have made a lot more sense. But if Cowboy Cerrone does decide to go back down to lightweight, I definitely don't see him getting a crack at any of the guys in the top five. Maybe someone like an Edson Barboza, who's number 4, who just lost to Khabib, maybe him. Eddie Alvarez, we know, is always game, and Eddie does have a loss to Cerrone when he made his UFC debut, so maybe Eddie will want to jump at trying to right that loss. But other than that, I'm not really sure if the UFC will want to put him in deep waters just yet. And when you look at the rest of both divisions, both welterweight and lightweight, as you said, it is just filled with killers there. And honestly, if you look at his losses last year, I didn't feel that Cerrone lost a step in those losses. I didn't come out of watching either of those fights thinking he was done. He was on the last leg. I think both against Jorge Masvidal and against Darren Till, I think Cerrone just got caught and surprised by, one, how hard Darren Till hits. I think against Masvidal, I think he might have just got a little overwhelmed with the fact that it was in his home state of Denver, Colorado. He was in front of his friends and family. And, you know, I hate to say this about Cowboy, but kind of like we saw in his title fight against Rafael Dos Anjos in Orlando, he kind of froze in the moment. And I wonder if Cowboy, we know he does suffer from anxiety, hence why he does all the crazy activities the week of the fight to kind of get himself to relax. I wonder if sometimes the pressure of either the magnitude of the fight or the arena and the surrounding gets to him at times, and he's not able to perform. But with this performance here, I would say he moved back down to lightweight. He's got someone like Kevin Lee, a rematch with Nate Diaz, who was in the crowd, by the way, won the smoke one up one good time. He's got a James Vick, who's also on the card, we'll get to momentarily. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But if he stays at welterweight, one particular matchup I'd like to see, Cerrone's number 11. What about taking on number 10, Santiago Ponzinibbio? I would love to see those two go at it. Ponzinibbio really put himself on the map as, hey, he's someone to be taken seriously here. And if those two were to go at it, it would be, I believe, a very entertaining matchup. Now, Cerrone ties Jorge St. Pierre and Michael Bisping for the most UFC wins overall with 20. Let me ask you guys both this question. Cerrone, we know, is one of the most popular fighters, very entertaining fighters overall. And he's got this many wins in the UFC. If Cerrone called it quits right now, what's Cerrone's legacy? Is he a UFC Hall of Famer? And you can take that for what it is. But is he a Hall of Famer? Is he just a guy who is really good but not great? Or how else maybe would you classify him? Leo, I'll start with you on this question.
Yeah, I think certainly he is a Hall of Famer. I think he has been a guy who's shown to be one of the elite fighters in the lightweight division for many years. And, you know, he's one of the guys whom the title has just kind of been a little bit too elusive for him. But he has been in those title fights. And, you know, as you say, he just doesn't really show up for those big events. And it might be more mental than skills-wise. I think he's certainly one of those guys who's skilled enough to be a champion. Or he was, earlier on in his career. But, I mean, we look at the UFC Hall of Fame, and we see some guys who probably don't necessarily belong in there in terms of fighting skill. You know, I think Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner probably come to mind, even though Forrest Griffin did manage to win a title at one point in his career. But I view Cowboy Cerrone as certainly one of those top guys who really caught people's imaginations for so many years in his career, and he was in some of those incredible wars, and he was, you know, a human highlight reel walking around in the UFC and in the WEC days. So I would certainly consider Donald Cerrone one of those Hall of Fame type of fighters.
David, what about you? If Cerrone ended his career now, what would be your lasting view on him?
Yeah, I think I think Donald Cerrone is a great fighter. I think the 2017 when he went 0-3, that would be the furthest thing from my mind. I mean, I feel like he's had such an illustrious and successful career. I think he's what, 0-4 in title fights or something, or 0-5 maybe. You know, and he lost all those title fights in the WEC especially, but I felt like he was so good even in the WEC that it's hard to imagine that he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's won how many fight of the night or performance of the night bonuses? I mean, as Leo just alluded to, this guy was a human highlight reel. And I feel like yesterday we saw one of those very fun, entertaining Cerrone fights that we're so used to. And it felt good. It felt nice seeing him back on that sort of train. He did call out Khabib, you know, and I think, so is that Does that mean he's going back to lightweight? I think his career definitely is going to continue from here. I don't know if retirement is necessarily on his mind, but I feel like if he did retire right now, the guy absolutely deserves all the praise he can get. And he pulled in ratings. I mean, he had great fights. What can you say about the guy? He's a great, entertaining fighter, and the fans loved him. You know, not much more to say than that.
No, really, that pretty much is a good way to say it. And, you know, Cerrone, for better or for worse, as far as, you know, being at the top, being a champion, being one of the elite guys, he is game to fight anybody. He's fought a who's who during his career. And I'm pretty sure, you know, he wants to get to 50 total UFC fights. We'll see how close he gets to that. But I'm sure he's going to fight for a little while longer. He is truly one of the most exciting fighters to watch. And whether he wins or loses, you know, when Cowboy's on the ticket, you better tune in to see his fights. Even when he fought someone, Miles Jury, back in 2015, a young up-and-comer, the fight wasn't as exciting as many expected, but Cowboy made it fun. Even when Jury was on his back and Cerrone was giving him the FU kicks. I mean, even stuff like that. And just his overall personality afterwards, calling out fighters or just calling to come back in 2 weeks and turning back around. Now, Leo did say, hey, he's probably going to slow down with that, and that could make some more sense as you get older. But he certainly is somebody to look at and say, man, it has been a fun time to watch the Cowboys win. Plus, when you tie for the most UFC wins of all time, I don't care who it's against, and I don't care what your wins and losses are or when you lost. The most wins of all time, that's got to mean you're out there amongst some of the best. Speaking of being entertaining and just someone who's fun to watch, and hey, when this guy's on, you want to go ahead and check him out. In the co-main event, we had Derek Lewis get a third-round TKO victory over Marcin Tybura, and afterwards talked about, hey, you know, he wants to fight either Verdum, Curtis Blaydes, or Francis Ngannou. We know he's not afraid to call anybody out. Told his wife to get ready because he's going deep tonight. Derek Lewis, one of the most entertaining fighters to listen to, not only on the mic, but also on Instagram if you follow him. Leo, what did you make of the Black Beast and his performance and really a comeback win in a third round against Tybura when it looked like the Beast might have lost the first two?
Absolutely. What a treat to watch Derek Lewis, both in the octagon and in the post-fight interviews and, you know, even in the social media, as we've mentioned before. This guy is absolutely the total package, and he made it very dramatic last night. I think he was on his way to a loss yesterday against Marcin Tybura. You know, his takedown defense was not there at all. And, you know, he says after the fact that he had a hard time getting his mind in the game. He went in there flat and just not being mentally prepared for the fight. But, man, he stepped in, you know, at the last minute and got an impressive knockout of a top-ranked guy. And as you said, he had a very entertaining post-fight interview in the octagon. He calls out Jimmy Smith for being the new Bellator guy, and then he says something very nice about his wife. It kind of reminds you of Brock Lesnar's days in the UFC. And, man, like, I know you just mentioned that a minute ago. In that 20-25-second span when Derek Lewis is calling out about going deep in his wife, all of a sudden we pan to Nate Diaz, and he pulls out a joint on national television. And, oh, my God, it was just the absolute best couple of minutes in UFC history. I thought it was very entertaining, and it's all kickstarted by Derek Lewis. And as I said last week, I think we're getting a treat watching this guy because, you know, he has flirted with retirement, unfortunately, in his career, and he's had to pull out of fights due to back issues, and hopefully he's got all that settled. And I think absolutely I love the fact that he's calling out, you know, all the top guys in the division. I don't know that Curtis Blaydes would necessarily be a good matchup for him because we saw what Curtis did to Mark Hunt. But, man, if he wants to fight Francis Ngannou, that would absolutely be fireworks. And I'd love to see it. Any time we get to see Derek Lewis, I'm absolutely tuning in because we know something entertaining is going to happen both before and after the fight. So I can't wait to see what this guy's career pans out to be.
David, what did you make of Derek Lewis's comeback victory? I was watching a video earlier where Luke Thomas described his fighting, his strategy last night, almost that of Yoel Romero's, taking his time, picking his spots, and exploding when needed to conserve energy. What did you make of Derek Lewis's impressive knockout victory?
Yeah, I think that was that was a great way to put it, because this guy, whatever energy he had left, whatever gas he had left in the tank, he just unloaded it all at once at Tabura, and it just worked. It just worked famously for him. I mean, what can I say? Derek Lewis, man, he had one little bump in the road against Mark Hunt last year, and besides that, he's had such a great run in the UFC. I'd love to see him fight Francis Ngannou. I mean, he was sort of avoiding that fight before Ngannou was a big name, but, you know, it's always fun to see Derek Lewis come out and bang, and he's just one of those guys that he's been entertaining on a consistent basis. This is three post-fight bonuses in a row that he's won, and I think we're going to see some more. It was a great come from behind. He was certainly on his way to a loss, I think, and I feel like he knew it. Whatever he had left in the tank, he just unloaded it, and it was great. Thank you, Leo, for stealing my line on Derek Lewis going deep in his wife and then immediately cutting to Nate Diaz to light up a joint on national television. It was the greatest 1-2 punch in UFC history. It was like a comedy show. We were dying of laughter for like a good minute or two. You know, it was great. It was overall, I feel like the post-fight interview combined with Nate Diaz's antics made for some great UFC history.
Well, it certainly did, and that 1-2 combination would have put anybody in the UFC on their rear for sure. It couldn't have been scripted any better. I don't think Vince McMahon could even put that better in the storyline. That was truly, truly epic. Derek Lewis with the mic drop comment. Nate Diaz is showing the crowd going crazy. Throws up the West Side, throws up the W for the West Side, then pops a joint in. And right before he lights it up, when the fire comes up, they cut away. They cut away from him. Truly, truly something to be amazed at. And that's partially what makes these guys such cult followers and fan favorites amongst the MMA community, is they come off as being generally, truly honest with who they are and just 100% real. Whether some people like it or not, that's totally fine. But you know, with those two and many others, you're always going to get the real and authentic version of them. I think a lot of people could relate and respect that.
But wait, hold on. I want to ask you guys this, because no one's really talking about this. What did you guys think of Derek Lewis in his post-fight interview to Jimmy Smith saying, oh, you're from Bellator, so I know you don't know what it's like to be in the UFC with the big boys. You know, what did you guys think? Do you think that was a little snarky, or what did you guys think of that comment?
No, as Kalani says, that's just Derek Lewis being himself and being completely honest. And I think people responded to it positively. I think it's not very good for the UFC to have, you know, the name Bellator be mentioned, you know, especially in a contract year when the UFC is trying to land a big contract with Fox or anybody else. It's probably not a good idea to mention the name Bellator, which is another, you know, the competition that you can also watch on free cable television. But I don't take it as any kind of disrespect from Derek Lewis to Jimmy Smith. And I think Jimmy Smith, you know, was professional about it. He took it in stride, and that's just Derek Lewis being Derek Lewis, you know.
Yeah, certainly. I felt the same way as well. I was like, oh, man, how you going to slap my boy like that? But then at the same time, you know, as Leo said, Jimmy just took it in stride. He didn't try to, you know, he kind of just, you know, let it happen. And again, I think with Derek Lewis, kind of like when Brock Lesnar, when he said the whole thing about he's going to have a Coors, Bud Light doesn't pay him, it's not really going to hurt the bottom line. It's not. Either, you know, Bud Light didn't pull out immediately after that. Sales didn't plummet and everything. No, I just think that's Derek Lewis being – completely honest with who he is and just, hey, again, whether you like it or not, I'm going to be me. So take it for what it is and let's move on to the next one. So even though it was it was also pretty funny as well.
Yeah, it was absolutely funny. And as we said, it's just a very real moment. I think guys like Colby Covington, who is kind of trying to fabricate a character that's not necessarily him, or even John Jones early in his career. And I think basically throughout his career, people have been calling him for not being who he is, you know, in front of the cameras. I think people like that can kind of take note, because people respond positively if that's just who you are. And I think even if Derek Lewis is not necessarily the, you know, eloquent or the most, he's just a real guy. And I think people respond positively to just that, just be yourself. And I think people just kind of gravitate towards that.
So certainly made for some great TV, though. The whole thing, the whole post fight was great.
Yeah, that. I mean, the Nate Diaz situation. I mean, there was a little girl right behind him on the next row.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you know, people could probably cry foul because of that. You know, that's not necessarily a good influence in a martial artist. But Nate Diaz is being who he is, and I think he did absolutely amazing because people are talking about him the next day. He didn't even fight last night, but he's absolutely making headlines, and he's on people's minds. And now people are like, okay, what's next for this guy? You know, what's going to happen next? I think it was absolutely a genius move, even if there are repercussions, which I don't think there will be, because at the end of the day, he didn't really like the joint on TV. He just kind of, you know, flashed it a little bit. And I mean, I'm sure we're not watching this 100% live. There's probably, like, you know, at least a 5-second delay, and they didn't really do anything to censor that on the West Coast. So I guess the UFC is not necessarily, pissed off about the situation. I don't think there's going to be any repercussions. I think they realize as well that, you know, maybe it's not the way that we would want him to promote himself, but he is promoting himself at the end of the day. You know what I mean? With 5 seconds of camera time, he got what he wanted.
There's not been one kid, one teenager, or one young adult, or even older adult, that has ever looked at what an athlete did outside of their respective sport and said, I did it because so-and-so did it. Not one. Not one person sniffed cocaine because Michael Irvin did it. Not one person took crack because Lawrence Taylor did it. Not one person is going to start smoking weed because Nate Diaz in the crowd did it as well. So
right.
If anybody
but
knows,
to be
hold on,
fair.
Hold on.
Right.
So the little girl behind it had a classic, classic response. But if anybody, and I mean anybody, has a problem with the fact that Nate Diaz, that might not be a good look, or it might be this. I say this to, and this isn't for you, Leo. This is to anybody, whether you're in the TV portion of the whole deal, whether you're an old conservative, or whether you're just someone who doesn't believe in it. That's fine. But guess what? As Danny Glover's character used to say in Lethal Weapon, go spit.
Yeah, but I mean, just keep in mind the fact that this is probably something that can only happen in UFC broadcast. I think if Tom Brady were to pull out a joint, even if he doesn't light it, if that's caught on camera, people would be absolutely demonizing him and calling foul. So keep in mind that these are probably things that we can only get away with in MMA, which is phenomenal. I mean, I love the fact that the guys can be who they are and not necessarily have to worry about repercussions. So there is that to consider that, you know, thank God the UFC
Tom
does
Brady
a lot
got,
of these things.
Leo, Tom Brady got demonized because he eats avocado ice cream. Avocado ice cream. No. If there's people out there who believe pineapple does not go on pizza, which is your right, then I'll be damned if you think avocado can be made into ice cream. So no. Tom Brady's avocado ice cream is way more offensive than Nate Diaz in a joint on television. That's my stance on it.
Some people were mad at Tom Brady for eating avocado ice cream, but not because he kissed his son on the lips. So
Well, there were people who complained about that. There were people who complained about that as well. Oh, he kissed him too long.
Well,
very few
people.
Yeah, but I mean, but there were still people who complained about it. And man, it's like, dude, man, don't be mad because your daddy didn't kiss you.
I didn't even hear about this avocado incident.
Yeah, man. When I know we're getting a little bit off MMA here, so I'll turn it back around shortly. But when Tom Brady came out with this book, and basically it was like a diet and workout regimen, because everyone wants to know how is Tom Brady at 40 years old, this many years in football, still able to play at such a high level and look very good. You've never heard about him gaining weight like Big Ben has, or really being injured as often as some players has. And he came out with this book basically describing his diet that he does in the off season, during the season, and then his workouts as well. And one of the things that stood out was he eats avocado ice cream. So, yeah. I mean, there's some other stuff in there as well, but he eats avocado ice cream. So, I think that's
I didn't even know that existed.
That should be a crime, and it should be put on the class one list of things that are banned in the world. But be that as it may,
I think that should be your dessert for ordering spinach pizza at a restaurant.
Yeah. If you order spinach pizza at a thing, it should come with a side of avocado ice cream. That's for damn sure. Just glancing over some stuff here so we can move on to other topics. James Vick, one of the most underrated, most feared fighters on the roster, He got a victory over Francis Trinaldo by decision. We got, we got Curtis Millender, TKO and via knee, Thiago Alves. Alves, one-time title contender, now looks like, well, you know, maybe it could be time for him to hang it up or try his luck at another organization. And, hey, hometown hero, Super Sage Northcutt, open up the main card. He got a victory as well via unanimous decision. So good for Sage Northcutt in that dispute as well. Get another victory, hopefully moving on to gain some real momentum. The young upstart really looking good. Now, looking good. And when you think of that, you think, okay, long hair, pretty beaches, nice drink. Well, I haven't been there personally, but I would imagine that Orlando, Florida has those things pretty nicely. And this coming weekend, we are going to see UFC on Fox in Orlando, Florida. Main event is going to be Josh Emmett versus Jeremy Stevens. Co-main event, Jessica Andrade versus Tisha Torres. I personally think that's just something for the fans, although, you know, they don't play for this side of the team, but it's okay. It's okay. Doesn't mean we can't appreciate the beauty, but it is what it is. We're also going to have OSP taking on Iller Latifi as well. We also got Platinum Mike Perry. We got Angela Hill. We got Sarah McMahon. It's a lot of good fights. Sam Alvey's on here as well. It's a lot of good fights and a lot of good fighters that are going to be in Orlando this coming weekend. David, I'll start with you. Josh Emmett, who really put his name on the mat in the featherweight division, stepping in late notice and knocking out Ricardo Lamas is a few weeks back in December. He's taking on one of the hardest hitters in the division, Jeremy Stevens, who just came off a huge victory over Doho Choi, I believe, in December as well. Both fighters are doing a short turnaround. What do you make of Josh Emmett taking on Jeremy Stevens in the main event?
Yeah, well, this is actually really exciting because Josh Emmett, I mean, nobody really expected him to come out and do what he did to Ricardo Lamas. I mean, that was pretty much the first time I'd heard of the guy. And now, you know, as you said, a pretty quick turnaround. 2 months later, coming in as a late replacement against Jeremy Stevens. I'm actually really excited to see what Josh Emmett could bring to the table because, like I said, that was the first time I heard of the guy, and he certainly impressed me against a guy like Ricardo Lamas, who I think I remember the show 2 months ago. We talked about Ricardo Lamas has nothing to gain but everything to lose by taking that fight. And, you know, it turned out how it did. But I feel like Josh Emmett is a guy who's on a lot of people's radars now, and I feel like Jeremy Stevens would be doing himself a disservice by overlooking his opponent. So Jeremy Stevens, you know, obviously coming off last month, he got a TKO win. So, and that was another pretty exciting fight. So this is a really tough fight to gauge because of the quick turnaround of both fighters, and we don't really know what Josh Emmett is made of. I feel like this is a huge fight for Josh Emmett and a pretty big fight for Jeremy Stevens also, if he could sort of derail this hype train Josh Emmett built for himself in such a short time. So it's going to be an interesting fight to look at. I still think Jeremy Stevens, obviously the more experienced guy, he's had some tough breaks here and there the last couple of years, but I think obviously Jeremy Stevens as the tougher comparer who we've seen time and time again pull out these victories, I have to go with Jeremy Stevens, but I wouldn't discredit Josh Emmett at all. You know, and I don't think Jeremy Stevens is either. I think it's going to be a tough fight, but I think Jeremy Stevens will get it done.
So I'm going to have to disagree and jump on the other side here. I think Josh Emmett, as we said, he's a guy who's absolutely on the upswing, and people are starting to take notice. And I mean, he's already ranked higher, and he's got nowhere to go but probably title shot should he get past Jeremy Stevens. And we've seen Stevens kind of be an up-and-down fighter in his career. He can't rack up more than a couple of victories in a row, and he does have losses against the top two guys in the division, both Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway. So I think if we look at, you know, what's next for either of these guys, I think Jeremy Stevens, even with a victory, he'd still probably have to rack up another couple of wins just because he does have those two losses against the top guys. Whereas Josh Emmett, you know, that's just a fresher guy. He's kind of the, you know, the hot new product that people are talking about. And if he does get past a big name like Jeremy Stevens, that only shoots him up even higher. So, you know, just in the interest of, you know, new names, meeting new names, I think it would serve the UFC a lot of good to see a guy like Josh Emmett go in there and handle everything, you know, the way he's supposed to, and hopefully climb up the ladder up into title contention.
For people that may not be familiar with Josh Emmett, which is perfectly fine, you know, with so many fighters and so many fight cards, sometimes guys get lost in the shuffle. Josh Emmett, 32-year-old fighter, fights out of Team Alpha Male in Sacramento, California. He's a former collegiate wrestler. He's 13-1 in his MMA career, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions, 7 decisions. He's 4-1 in the UFC, again, coming off of a quick, late substitution against Ricardo Lamas last year in December on UFC on Fox card, and really put his name on the map there, and now trying to do it once again against Jeremy Stephens. It is going to be interesting to see how these two do, given that they're both turning around on fairly short notice. Who, you know, for some guys and trainers, I've even heard say that, you know, sometimes when you're already in shape, It's good to take a fight on short notice as opposed to, well, it's been a couple months, I did get fat, now I'm trying to take another fight on short notice. That can be hazardous. But as far as, hey, Jeremy Stephens fought in the middle of January, Emmett fought in the middle of December, let's do a quick turnaround. Okay, got it. We didn't get bloated up over the holidays. We haven't gotten too far out of shape. So really, we kind of just took a break from our last training camp, and now we're getting right back into it. So I am very, very excited to see who benefits from this and how both fighters tend to look here. Like Leo said, Jeremy Stephens is one of the hardest hitters in the UFC. Don't tell Conor McGregor that, because he'll just say, who the fuck is that guy? But he's also a guy who, unfortunately, in his career, as Leo said, hasn't been able to be consistent. He's been up and down. You know, he gets a win here, lost there. Gets 2 wins here, 2 losses there. So, and for Jeremy Stephens, Joe, he's somebody who you want to root for, and you want to say, man, I really want to see what this guy does against the elite guys in the division. But then when he has fought him, he's come up short as well. So you got to wonder, is he, you know, kind of like Cowboy Cerrone of the featherweight division? That's not a knocker in any way, shape whatsoever, but he is somebody who has a tremendous skill set. He is an exciting fighter to watch, but when he takes on the big-name fighters, he just doesn't seem to be able to pull it all the way through. For Emmett, coming from a tremendous camp, you know, he's even said when he fought Ricardo Lamas, he's helped guys like the Cody Garbrandts and the Uriah Halls get ready for their big matches. So to him, taking on a big opponent with the name himself, he doesn't feel as much pressure because he's kind of already been in several big-time camps as well, even though it was a training partner, but still, that experience does speak loudly. So it is going to be fun to see these two clash against one another in the cage. And speaking of clashing in the cage, the women's strawweight bout, we're about to get a clear picture here, possibly even a number one contender's bout here between Jessica Andrade taking on Tisha Torres in the co-main event. These are two very tough fighters. Tisha Torres, you know, a young fighter still. She's 28 years old. Unfortunately, she has suffered some injuries that's kind of set her back, but she's 10-1 in her MMA career. She's riding a 3-fight winning streak. Her last victory was December against Michelle Waterson at 218. So she's kind of fairly on a short turnaround herself as well, but, you know, she can stay healthy. She has certainly shown that, hey, she can be one of the most dynamic fighters within the division. You also got Jessica Andrade, 26 years old. She's 17 and 6, very strong. She loves to slam her opponents and utilize the ground and pound. Her last victory was in September of last year, UFC Fight Night against Claudia Gajelia. She's 4-1 in her last 5 fights. Her loss coming in UFC 211 to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Leo, what do you make of the co-main event with Andrade and Torres? How do you see this playing out?
I absolutely think this is a number one contender fight for the next crack at the title. And I think both of these women have history with the top two women in the division. So Jessica Andrade, you know, she recently lost to Joanna Jędrzejczyk in her title fight, and she didn't necessarily look very good in that title fight. But she turns around and she absolutely beats the bricks out of who we all thought was the number two woman in that division, Claudia Gadelha. So, you know, that one victory, that's probably enough to, you know, get that momentum going for her, where it would be acceptable to really put her in that conversation for a title shot. And, you know, I think depending on the way that the winner looks, you could probably make a case for either one, but I still would like to see what the result is between the championship fight between Joanna and Rose Namajunas. And, you know, if Rose comes out the victor, as I expect her to be, then I think it would make more sense for Jessica Andrade to face Rose because she hasn't faced her before, whereas Tisha already has a loss against Rose Namajunas. So, and then the other way being true for Ioane and Jędrzejczyk, if she comes out the victor, you know, if this fight this weekend is not necessarily a, you know, that definitive of a victory, then you probably, you know, just wait for the championship fight and see, you know, or for this number one contender fight rather, to see what you know, what comes out of it. But absolutely, I do think it is a number one contender fight, and probably regardless of any results, the winner should get a title shot.
David, you got two of the top contenders here. Even though Andrade did lose her title shot last year, she still showed against Gadelha that she's one of the best in the division. And they got Tisha Torres. Now that she's back, she's showing that, hey, don't forget about me because, yeah, I'm pretty damn good. What do you make of this particular matchup? And should the winner get a title shot against in the future?
Yeah, I completely agree with Leo. This should be a number one contenders fight, but I also agree that the result of this fight should tie directly into the result of the championship fight. I mean, Jessica Andrade has never fought Rose, so hopefully if Andrade wins, it would make a lot of sense for that fight to happen if Rose wins. Then they could fight each other. If Tisha Torres has never fought Ioana, then and she's lost to Rose, I think it would make sense for her to fight Ioana more. But both of these ladies have only lost to their opponents once. You know, so it's not like it wouldn't be too much of a bummer for it would be a little bit more so if Andrade, who just lost less than a year ago to Ioana in a title fight, you know. And but Tisha, her fight was 2 years ago against Rose. I think either way you have slice it, this should be a number one contenders fight. It should be a great fight regardless, and I think as long as Ioana, the only way I can see this not being a number one contender fight is if the Ioana and Rose fight is a very razor-thin close fight and Ioana wins. People are going to want to see that trilogy, and that's going to step in the way of Andrade and Tisha Torres. So as long as that doesn't happen, I feel like this fight absolutely makes sense to be a title fight or a title contenders fight.
Yeah, certainly. You know, the division is always growing, and you always want to try to find that next star, whether it's for a new challenger for the champion or just someone that you can say, hey, if this turns out to be someone who could go on a run or even dethrone the champion, we want to kind of say, okay, let's see what this person could do. And both fighters have shown against the majority of the division that they could be just one notch above them. Again, Tisha Torres, with her injuries, she suffered a torn ACL where she had to sit out for over a year. So kind of like that whole out of sight, out of mind thing. But since she's been back, she has really shown that, hey, my only loss was to Rose Namajunas. Other than that, I'm here to stay and I'm here to make a point. And now she's training in Denver, Colorado with her fiance.
Raquel Pennington.
Hey, there you go. Sorry, I kind of went airhead on that one. But Raquel Pennington, so not only is she able to have her fiance there in her corner who potentially could be getting a title shot soon herself, but she's also with a very good team now in Denver, Colorado, where they're really getting them all together as far as being tough and competitors. Look, if Tisha Torres wins and you got Raquel Pennington getting a title shot shortly, you could have two females for one camp vying for a title shot. So that just goes to show not only the quality of the coaches, but also the camps that they're in. For Jessica Andrade, even though she lost to Ioana, she certainly kept trying her best to bring the fight to her. Granted, maybe her stand-up is a little limited because she does just try to juggernaut you and just come straight at you with a bull rush and try to grab you so that she can utilize her strength, bring you down to the ground, and if you can keep her away like Ioana did, you can kind of stifle her. But if she could sharpen up her stand-up skills to maybe hide or disguise her trying to come in and initiate the grappling, you know, she could certainly be somebody who's very, very scary within that division because she has shown she's got punching power. She doesn't let her hands go as often, but she's got punching power when she does land on you. So I'm very excited to see these two females throw down. I think it's going to be one of the more exciting fights on the card. Generally, not all the time, but generally when the females are on the card, they do tend to always put on exciting matchups, and this, I believe, shouldn't be any different from that. We got a light heavyweight showdown, OSP, Latifi. I want to ask this. For someone like OSP, the state of the light heavyweight division right now, we see that it's in flux. Will John Jones come back? Hopefully in the next week or two, we'll find out. DC is going to be taking on Stipe Miocic. Does he stay up there for? Does he stay up there, or does he come back? Okay, we don't know. Other than that, like, what's the rest of it? You know, Gustafsson is lost. Teixeira's kind of old. Manoa's lost. You got OSP, who's riding a 3-5 win streak. If he gets a victory here, that's 4 in a row. Where do you guys maybe think that puts him in the hierarchy of the UFC light heavyweight division? You know, they're talking about maybe Alexander Gustafsson gets the next crack at DC when he comes back. Maybe Manoa because of the rivalry there. 4-5 win streak in that division. Where do you think maybe OSP lands? Leo, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think 4 fights in such a thin division, I mean, that's worth its weight in gold. And as you say, Gustafsson might be the next in line, or maybe Jimmy Manoa, but these are choices that are being made for lack of better choices. So I think if a guy like OSP, you know, he's been very exciting throughout his career. He just hasn't put victories together in a row very much, but I mean, if a guy like this, if he gets another freaking Von Fluchok, I mean, you just make him the champion right away. You don't even give him a title shot. You just give him that championship because, I mean, he's basically done more Von Fluchoks than the guy is named after. So he is a very exciting guy to watch. And, you know, 4 victories in a row, that's nothing to scoff at. And I think absolutely you start considering this guy one of the top in the division if he keeps racking up these victories the way he's been doing over the last couple of years.
David, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a big OSP fan. You know, I always try to pull for the guy anytime he fights. I root for him. I don't know. I just really like the guy. He's such a talented and athletic individual from his time at Tennessee to his career in MMA today. I think he's picked up. I feel like doing 2 Von Fluchoks back to back. I feel like that's impressive, no matter who you do it against. In a UFC fight, and to come out and knock out Corey Anderson in such a brutal fashion as he did, it was great. And I love seeing it, and I'll always support OSP getting a crack at the title. I think he's going to be one of those guys, even if he gets a crack at the title, he's never going to get it done. Like Donald Cerrone, who's 0-4 in title fights, or, I'm forgetting some names here, sorry, but
you're right.
I feel like that's OSP. You're my favorite. Yeah, thank you. I was thinking of Uriah. Yeah, Uriah in recent years. I feel like I'm always going to be for OSP getting a crack at the title, but I also like Ilir Latifi. I feel like he's a great competitor, and I feel like he almost beat Ryan Bader a couple of years ago. He got knocked out in that fight, but he was winning the fight up until that knockout. We only saw him once last year. He beat Tyson Pedro, but I feel like Ilir Latifi is another guy who could be a tough competitor in this division. And every time I think of him, I think of this dude riding a horseback. And I feel like that's just, like, so badass for someone to have that image in so many people's heads. I think this is a big fight for both competitors. And if OSP wins, I feel like Alexander Gustafsson is the clear-cut number one contender in that division to me, but I think OSP is definitely right behind him right there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how this goes between the two. Latifi, definitely somebody who's 6-3 in the UFC. He's ranked number 9. He's another one that if he gets an impressive victory here, he could be someone that climbs the ranks as well. With OSP, we've seen him against guys like Shogun and other top competitors as well in the division. Some good, some not so good. But, yeah, he's somebody who, to me, again, he's another fighter. And I know he started MMA later in his career because he's a former collegiate football player. But he's somebody that I feel, you know, you get a win here and then you get a loss. You get a win here and then you get a loss. excuse me. He had a win streak, then he lost to Ryan Bader. 1-2, lost to Gilbert Teixeira. Came back 1-1, then he lost 3 in a row. Now he's riding a 3-fight win streak. And yeah, he might be, you know, no disrespect, he might be like another Cowboy Cerrone. He can beat the middle to bottom tier of the guys, but once he gets matched up against the elite guys within the division, maybe that's just a little bit too much, and that speaks to how late he started in the sport and how much advanced the other guys are with their training. Possibly we'll see how it all plays out there. Real quick, wrapping up this particular card before we jump into what happened with Bellator on Friday, we also got Mike Perry taking on Max Griffin. We got former champion Rene Barrio in action. We got Sarah McMahon Angela Hill, Island Joe Bain, and Ben Sanders, Sam Alvey. So this weekend's UFC on Fox card is going to be fun to watch, and there's going to be some entertaining matchups and some fun fighters to see step in the cage this weekend in Orlando, Florida. Stepping into the cage this past weekend on Friday from Uncasville, Connecticut, we have Bellator 194, Mitrione versus Nelson 2. Matt Mitrione and Roy Nelson, we all know, met in the UFC. Nelson got the victory. Mitrione get a bit of revenge here by getting a majority decision win over Big Country, 20-28, 29-28. Don't know if you guys were able to either see it or catch some highlights or read up on it, but what did you guys make of Matt Mitrione advancing to the next round of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix Tournament with a victory over Roy Nelson? David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, when they first announced this bracket, I felt like it was Meathead's tournament to win. But after seeing him fight against Roy Nelson, I didn't catch the fight, but I did read up on what exactly happened. I guess he was just playing it a little safe because he knew he's very familiar with Roy Nelson's power. But I feel like, this, you know, looking at the whole bracket, I felt like from the beginning, Matt Mitrione is going to take it, and, you know, Brian Bader might put up some tough competition. Who knows? They'll be likely fighting each other very soon. I feel like that was just Matt Mitrione playing it safe. And, God, I don't know why Roy Nelson was so successful with the takedown. I don't know why he wasn't doing it earlier. You know, if he had such a dominant third round that one judge gave it a 10-8 to him, you know, why wasn't he implementing that game plan earlier than, the final minute of round two or something like that? It also goes to show Roy Nelson still has something left in the tank. I feel like Roy Nelson comes out and he has fights where he shows signs that he may have something left in him, and I feel like that's sort of his career now. We're just going to see flashes of the old Roy Nelson here and there. He's not going to have too much success, even in a very thin Bellator heavyweight division. But I feel like, you know, Matt Mitrione did what he needed to do, pick up the win, and move on to the next round.
I 100% agree that I thought Matt Mitrione was the hands-on favorite to win the whole tournament, but it was underwhelming to see what he did against Roy Nelson. And I didn't catch the fight live, and I did catch highlights and glimpses of a couple of rounds. But, you know, I know that Roy Nelson did win the first fight pretty clearly, but I had the expectation in my mind that Matt Mitrione has made strides in his career throughout the years, whereas Roy Nelson has kind of not necessarily regressed, but he has kind of turned his game very one-dimensional, and he has been a guy that just kind of keeps going for the same right, overhand right, and he doesn't use his full skill set to his fullest potential. And unfortunately, it was a whole lot of a closer fight than I was expecting it to be. I thought Mitrione was going to be the alpha fighter in that cage and take control, but he did seem a little bit tentative. And as David, I think, pointed out, he seemed like he was fighting MMA for points, and he was just looking for a safe victory, and he wasn't looking for the risks. And maybe the overhand right from Roy Nelson did kind of scare him off into not wanting to get knocked out, but I wanted to see a little bit more out of Matt Mitrione, and he could still probably be the favorite to win the tournament. But if Bellator, you know, really wants to promote this guy as a potential champion, I think hopefully he's going to turn in a bit of a more exciting performance, particularly against a guy who's probably on the downswing of his career.
Yeah, certainly. I think you said it best. I think that right hand of Roy Nelson, which we have seen put guys down in the blink of an eye, I think that was in the back of his head. Granted, they did fight and Mitrione got knocked out by Roy in 2012, and he was still young in his career. It was only his seventh fight professionally. But still in all, you know, you never forget those type of losses, and Roy, one of the hardest hitters with that overhand right. And, you know, I wonder if, because of the tournament format for the Grand Prix, I wonder if guys are maybe trying not to go all out early to avoid any serious injuries, you know, kind of doing that whole, look, let me get by, let me get a win, let me get to the next round. If I get to the finals, that's when maybe I could take more chances, because then I know that everything's on the line. But if I try to go all out now, let's say I break a hand or a wrist or injure my leg or whatever the case may be, then I get injured, I get pulled out, somebody replaces me, i.e. the Strikeforce Grand Prix, where Daniel Cormier, who wasn't even initially in the tournament, comes in as an injury replacement and wins the thing. So I wonder how much that plays into the fighter's mentality as well. But, you know, Roy Nelson, say what you will, as far as some people not liking when Joe Rogan criticizes some of the fighters and gives his input on what he thinks they can do, you know, but you look at it now and say, yeah, you know, Roy's probably one of those guys that, and I talked to you guys about this over the weekend. I said, Roy's one of those fighters that you just say, what could have been? If he just would have been serious about his entire MMA career, what he could have accomplished overall, because he's shown that he's got one of the best chins we've ever seen. He's got a tremendous right hand, and he's got good grappling and fairly decent cardio for a man his size. If he ever took cardio, strength and conditioning seriously, and if he ever got with some legit coaches and stayed consistent with them throughout his career and came up with better strategies other than just trying to get knockout bonuses, what his career could have been overall. Heck, maybe he'll be a former champion. Matt Mitriondo, riding a 4-fight win streak since being in Bellator, put Roy Nelson, who he lost to, and along with Fedor, under his cap as far as, hey, I'm just keep on improving. And at 39 years old, he's no spring chicken, but Matt Mitriondo is certainly showing that at least in his 4 fights in Bellator, that this was the right move for him to move on from the UFC to Bellator. We'll see how he does for the rest of the Grand Prix tournament. We also had Pitbull get a victory over Derek Campos in the first round via TKO. We had a women's flyweight bout, Heather Hardy defeating Anna Joelton, and from what I'm gathering, not a very impressive decision, but she wins nonetheless. For those who may or may not know, Heather Hardy, former boxing champion, 20-0, when she made her in her last Bellator outing last year, she took a brutal kick to the face and broke her nose. And her face, I mean, the J.J. Watt picture of him with the busted nose a couple years ago, that looks like nothing. It looks like literally he got a bee stung compared to what her face looked like, but she tried to tough it out. She gets a victory here. Here's an interesting, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but both Hardy and Joelton are also professional boxers. So when Heather Hardy described that they have this deal set up, they have the one MMA bout here. They're going to fight each other again later this year, but in a boxing match, so to speak, given that their backgrounds and now doing that. What do you guys think of that as far as, hey, if we got two guys or two fighters who have a specific background at a high level in another profession like boxing, let's set it up. Let's do the one-on-one, one MMA bout, one professional boxing match. Kind of sounds like some other famous boxer and another good famous MMA fighter tried to do the same thing, but didn't work out. But anyways, what do you guys make of that setup? Do you like it, love it, hate it? What do you think? Leo, I'll start with you.
I think going into the fight this weekend, I thought it was a great idea. And I love that co-promoting. I know you, Kalani, have been talking about maybe the UFC should do some kind of co-promotion with you know, guys like Glory. You know, they can send guys back and forth, and that's great, you know, promotion for both sports. And I thought going in, that was a great idea. You know, these two ladies, especially when it's the same two competitors, they're going to be competing back-to-back in two different sports. But I think after the fight this past weekend, I did see some lowlights, if you will. There wasn't a whole lot of action going on. It was very low-level action at that. I really don't think it serves them any good to really keep mentioning the fact that these two ladies fought in MMA. I think they want to just kind of let people forget about that and just promote the boxing fight itself. And I don't even think that they have any kind of a structure in place for when it's going to happen or where or anything like that. They just know that the fight is going to happen. But I think, man, it was unfortunate for Bellator to have this snooze fest on their card, because I know you and I were talking about that this is probably one of the fights that we were looking forward to the most, especially because Heather Hardy is, you know, just so good on the mic, and she does have she has racked up a lot of victories in boxing, but I think she showed this past weekend that her MMA level is very, very much lacking, and there's a lot to be desired there. And I think, you know, maybe we can give her a little bit more time to get these skills up to par. But, man, it was just unfortunate that they turned in a very boring and low-level performance.
David, what are your thoughts on Hardy and Joelton having a one-on-one, one MMA, one boxing match? What do you think about that?
Well, I like
I like what Bellator is doing, first and foremost, bringing in Heather Hardy, bringing in Aaron Pico, you know, two people who didn't have any MMA fights on their record, and bringing them in and sort of building them up into bigger names. And I think that it's relatively successful in both cases. I think Heather Hardy, you know, she's 20-0 in boxing, and I feel like, it would make sense to have a boxing match between the two, because, you know, maybe it'll be a little more entertaining. This is a field both fighters are more comfortable in. This is sort of their bread and butter, and go out and see what it does. I'm not opposed to the whole MMA and boxing sort of correlation there. If they can make it happen, make it happen. Is it going to be under Bellator's banner? You know, is Bellator branching into boxing, sort of like what Zuffa is doing? We'll see how they have two boxers on their roster. If they want to branch into boxing, it would only make sense to do that. And I still think, even though the MMA version of the fight wasn't so entertaining, I don't think that means that the boxing match will necessarily be the same.
Yeah, certainly. I do like the format. Like Leo pointed out, I've talked about this before, that now that Glory is on UFC Fight Pass, I'm just not sure why the UFC hasn't done cross promotions. Bring over a kickboxer to take on one of your best stand-up guys, or maybe send one of your best stand-up fighters over with a kickboxing background, send them to Glory and see how they do. Look, there's a lot, you know, just as we talked about with UFC on Fox card and the one before, there's a lot of guys in the UFC who are very good, but they're just not there at the top of the division, or they're just not going to get there, but they're still very good fighters. Why wouldn't you take fighters like that, or guys who are a little lesser known or maybe a little bit further down the ranking, and try them in Glory? If nothing else, all you're going to do is bring name from the UFC over to Glory. You help out Glory, guess what that does? It helps out UFC Fight Pass, so vice versa. So I do like this deal that they have with Heather Hardy and Jolton. You know, the MMA bout wasn't what I know many people probably were hoping for, but, you know, just sometimes, you know, the stars didn't line up that night. The strategies just didn't pan out. One or both fighters just couldn't find their rhythm and their timing. It's a number of reasons why a fight maybe doesn't pan out. We'll see how the boxing match turns out later on between these two. Maybe we'll get some fireworks there, or at least a little bit more entertainment throughout the entire bout. We'll see how that goes. What I found entertaining was we had a light heavyweight, not a title, but a light heavyweight bout. We had Vadim Nemkov defeating former champion Leon McGarry via leg kicks. I mean, when I read that, I was like, ouch. So that just goes, and it was in the third round. So him and Pepe and Liam McGarry's legs. And, you know, we don't see it often, but we have seen guys get finished in MMA bouts via leg kicks. So, you know, say what you will about them, man. You know, I've had my criticism about leg kicks. If done correctly, they can be some serious, serious weapons to use in a fight. So, and then we also had Danny Garcia knocking out Brandon Rios. I believe it was the ninth round TKO he got over him. So Danny Garcia on Saturday.
Yeah,
Danny Garcia.
Punch too.
Yeah. He had a nice little short hook. You know, it wasn't a big wind up punch. So that just goes to show Danny Garcia maybe doesn't have, you know, the Triple G knockout highlight reel, but he's got some tremendous power there. Indeed. So what does Danny Garcia do going from here? We'll see. But the welterweight division has been put on notice. Now, speaking of putting on notice, don't know if you guys are familiar. Well, I know Leo isn't, but this past weekend we had the premiere of Black Panther, and it has grossed the fifth largest opening weekend numbers so far. And this was the flagship start-off point. This wasn't the sequel or the trilogy or mashup. It was the first solo film. So for it to have that much success really goes to speak, one, just how good the movie was, but then also the fans going out there trying to support it for whatever the reasons may be, just trying to show the numbers to Hollywood that, hey, you give us products like this, we will gladly go out and support it. Leo, I know you didn't get a chance to see it. Shame on you. Shame on you. But just in what you've heard, as far as me and David kind of talk about it, and maybe some buzz you've heard from other people, and just, you know, I know you're not a big superhero fan, person. What are your thoughts on the fact that a movie like this stirred up some controversy, got people talking, and then it turns out these type of numbers? What do you, as an outsider, what do you take away from all this?
Well, I am intrigued. I think, you know, I was absolutely open to the idea of watching the movie with you guys yesterday. I think we just kind of showed up in between showtime, so I wasn't really willing to wait 40 minutes to watch the movie. But I am intrigued that maybe I will watch it down the line, whether I wait for it to come out on DVD or whatever. But as you say, that's just not my type of movie. I'm not the demographic for the superhero type or the Marvel type movies. But it has been making news, and you know that does kind of, you know, get my ear open. I knew absolutely nothing about this movie up until last week when you mentioned it, and it's been on the news every single day since the movie came out. So there is some mild level of interest. I don't know necessarily that I would like it. I mean, I have seen some reviews, and everybody seems to be pretty much on board with the movie. So I'm willing to watch it. Maybe I'll find some time in the next week or so to watch it.
Good man. Like I told you last night, I know it's not your flavor, but I think if you get past some of the superhero antics, I think you might actually say, yeah, you know what? Wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It wasn't like Clockwork Orange and whatnot while watching it. So I think you might enjoy it in that sense. David, man, I know you saw it like myself this weekend. I know you really wanted to talk about this. So the floor is yours, my man. What did you think of Black Panther?
Yeah. Well, you saw it three times in what, in 2 days, so or in 3 days. So you're a little bit more hardcore than I am, but I loved the movie. I thought it was great, very entertaining. From the first moment, here's the thing, man. When I first saw the trailer, I didn't think anything of, like, you know, black versus white, or, you know, this is like a Black Power sort of movie. I didn't think anything of that. I thought the media sort of made it to be that. And the people behind the marketing of the movie, they sort of parlayed that into the success. I was interested in the movie from the very beginning. From the first time I saw the trailer, I thought, damn, this looks cool. This looks like it's going to be a good, fun action movie, and that's exactly what it was. I have very minimal complaints. I thought the special effects were good. Loved Michael B. Jordan. I thought he stole the show. I can't wait to see Black Panther in Avengers. You know, and it's fun. It's just a fun sort of movie. This is the time of year. You never really see big movies come out in February, but it shattered all of Deadpool's February records. And, you know, it's a fun, great movie. I think the fact that it was an all-black cast, I thought that sort of maybe inspired more black people to come out and see the movie. I thought maybe that had something to do with how successful the movie was, but I, you know, you saw it with your friend Jim. I think race played very little into a lot of people's interest in the movie. I thought a lot of people just thought the movie was fun and entertaining and interesting, and they wanted to see a good action flick, and that's exactly what it was.
No, definitely. I think that there was the whole let's go out and support something that, you know, is a representation of us. Even though it's a fictional world, it's still, you know, a reflection of our own people. And let's go out there and let's show that, hey, you know, a good director is a good director regardless of gender or skin color. Good actors and actresses are good actors and actresses regardless of gender or skin color as well. And I definitely think there were people that went there for that. And also, you know, Black Panther really stole a lot of the themes from Civil War, and for people who maybe were either familiar with him or weren't familiar with him at all, they see him in Civil War and they're like, yo, who is this character? And wow, that suit. And then, like you said, you know, you throw in an all-star cast, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, David Kuya, Letitia White, Michonne from The Walking Dead. You also got Michael B. Jordan, who's really emerging as a star. And Chadwick Boseman, who basically played every famous black person not named Malcolm X just yet, it all came together as really something perfect. And really, I felt that the story that they told in it was one that I felt people could relate to. Even, you know, like we always say, even if you just take some of the words and you just change it. Don't make it black and white. Make it, you know, brown and yellow or green and orange, whatever the case may be. But if you just change some of the words, I'm pretty sure a lot of people could relate to it. I talked to one person who kind of, you know, kind of have some things to say about how they didn't like a certain motive being pushed in the movie. And I said, look, is that any different than in 300 when it was all about fighting for Greece against the Persians and we got to annihilate them to get them out of here before they take over? Not really. So, you know, all you got to do is just change some things. But I definitely think Leo and anyone else out there who hasn't seen it, please, please, please do yourself a favor and go out there and see it. It is a much-watched film.
But even when you look at Michael B. Jordan's reasoning behind, you know, his whole motive of wanting to be the bad guy, of, you know, because what is it? Wakanda didn't help out other African nations when they were being enslaved. It's not even a bad reasoning, you know, for wanting to use the sort of weapons that they have. It's totally like understandable. I like Michael B. Jordan because he was a great villain. He was a villain with a personality, and he had a good motive that you haven't really seen in movies before. I thought it was just, they just nailed it, you know? They just hit the hammer right on the head.
Yeah, so when you guys were talking about this last night, and you mentioned that, David, that you could see the point of view from the villain, I think that's probably what intrigued me the most, and I think that's why I was willing to buy a movie ticket yesterday, is that I really enjoy just the villain side of a movie, right? I mean, I think the big reason I really don't like these superhero movies is there's too much suspension of disbelief, and I really need to be involved and believe why certain things are happening. And usually superhero villains are just very, very corny and very poorly written. But, I mean, I'll admit that the Batman movie versus the Joker, that was probably the only superhero movie that I've ever liked. And I think the Batman was my least favorite part of that movie. I think the Joker absolutely stole that movie. And I think it was just a very good crime drama that happened to have a superhero in it. And I think that's what intrigues me about this movie, is that you guys say that Michael B. Jordan's character was very pretty much justified in being, you know, the bad character. I think that's pretty good writing. And as you guys say, it's not necessarily focused on too much action or special effects. It's a very well-written story, and that's, to me, that's key, and that's the number one thing that would intrigue me about watching it. So I'll certainly give it a chance, you know, as soon as probably the theater stopped filling up too much, you know?
Now, certainly, one thing, and just like David pointed out, you can understand Michael B. Jordan's character, Eric Killmonger, you can understand his reason. I would dare say, I don't know if I want to label him as the villain. I almost want to say he was an anti-villain. You know, kind of like we say
anti-hero.
Deadpool or the Punisher is an anti-hero. I kind of want to say he was an anti-villain. In some ways, in some people's eyes, he might have been an anti-hero. It's all about where you stand on it, you know, and I agree. His reasonings for wanting to do it, and Leo, I agree with you as well. This wasn't one of those, I want to rule the world, or I want all the money, or no, it wasn't your typical scheme like that. It had real life implications that affected the growth and the outcome of the character, which I believe a lot of people, especially those who come from a culture where they feel like, hey, you know, we've always been given the short end of the stick, that they can certainly relate to. But not just Michael B. Jordan's role, but I truly felt even the women of this movie really, really did a tremendous job in being presented as strong, smart warriors. They didn't come off as side characters. And that was one thing I really enjoyed about this movie, is all of your main characters came off as main characters. Nobody came off really as a sidekick or someone who's just there for entertainment values. Like, oh, this is supposed to be the comedian of the group or the goofball of the group. No, everyone had a specific purpose, and I felt the writing team, the director, and the actors were able to pull off a really good point in making sure that everyone was there for a reason and purpose, and everyone was presenting in a strong, respectful manner to where you can walk away, you know, kind of looking at the quote unquote villain or anti villain, you could look at him and say that's your favorite character. You could look at this person and say, actually, I really like who this lady was or who this person was or what this was. So I really did enjoy it in that sense. And yeah, I definitely did my part in trying to make sure Black Panther had a big opening week, and I saw it 3 times in 4 days. Almost saw it 4 times, twice in one day when we were going to watch it last night. So, yeah, but maybe I need to go to rehab and kind of detox from Black Panther. But it is such a great movie. I thoroughly enjoy it overall. And I want to ask you guys this in relation to Black Panther. You know, we saw what Wonder Woman did last year. We see what Black Panther does now. We're getting a Captain Marvel film and a Black Widow film. How long do you guys think we might get to the point where it's not the first lead woman role, it's not the first woman this, the first Black this, the first Hispanic that, or the first Asian that? How long do you think it's where, hey, it's just a good movie? You know, there's so many movies depicting, you know, not to – who depict – white Caucasian males. Nobody says, oh, well, this is the first white. We got all that. How long do you guys think Hollywood might get around to making sure that we've checked all the boxes and say, okay, now this is just another good movie?
Well, let me start this off. I think, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. So I think that's just a product of our society today. I think there's a lot of massaging your own ego in millennials today, and I think that's just what we see in media every single day. I think I saw an article the other day where I think the swimsuit cover of SI is going to have the first female with a prosthetic limb or something like that, and I think a couple of years ago we saw the first transgender on the cover of another magazine. That's just everything is about first, and it's all about look how progressive and cool we are as a generation. So unfortunately, I think Hollywood is just kind of playing into that. And, you know, that's just the fads that we all go through. And, you know, there's a lot of social issues that go on, especially with, the Twitter age and everything that goes on Facebook. Everything is about equality for everybody. But I think that there's a certain point where we just kind of go over the top a little bit. And, you know, now we're talking about, I think there was another article today that said, some woman is embracing her cellulite, where, you know, that's not anything healthy to be necessarily proud of, but, you know, she's showing it off in a cover of a magazine. So, you know, now it's a body positive image instead of being something that's not necessarily healthy. So I think we're just kind of going a little bit over the top with, you know, everybody is the same and everybody, you know, deserves whatever. But I mean, I think Hollywood, as long as they see money in those kind of situations, we're just going to be seeing those types of things playing out in our movies.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. My whole life, I've never I never thought of Black Panther as like a Black Power sort of movie, and the movie doesn't necessarily promote it either. It was just sort of the advertising and the media. You know, and the one person promoting that sort of ideal in the movie is the villain. You know, he's the bad guy. So I remember, you know, growing up when I was a kid, nobody gave a shit Wesley Snipes was Blade. Nobody cared Halle Berry was a female lead superhero in Elektra. And it's crazy that we're so, you know, it's a big deal today, but it wasn't when it really was the first time happening, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Nobody really cared, and I think it's really telling of the society we live in today, where back then you could have Blade, which was still a super successful, great movie, you know, that, again, made a ton of money. Nobody really, talked about or paid attention to Wesley Snipes being a Black guy, being the star. I didn't even think about it until, like, a week or two ago when they're talking about Black Panther. You know, and I just feel like it's mostly the society we're living in today. The sooner we get to a point where, you know, Black Panther is it's not a Black Power sort of movie. The sooner we get to that, you know, and the more I feel connected we'll be as a society. That's when we'll finally get to a point where racial tensions are really low, and it'll just be better when we stop looking at, oh, Wonder Woman, a female lead, how great, how empowering. And it's like, we've seen this so many times in movies before. Has anyone seen Panic Room, another movie with Forest Whitaker? I mean, that was like so many, and there's so many examples I could give. But again, it's just the society we live in today. I ignore it. I just go out to see a movie to be entertained. I didn't watch Wonder Woman because of a female lead. I didn't watch Black Panther because of a black lead. I just wanted to see good movies, and as long as the movies are good, then that's all I care about. And in a lot of the cases, the movies are good, and I think that's what we should focus on, if they're good movies.
Yeah, they're definitely indeed. Yeah. Black Panther was that. It was a good movie all around, you know, obviously, you know, if you just take out, you know, the whole race thing, you definitely get a good film. Some people say it's one of, if not the best, Marvel standalone film. You know, obviously, if you take out the Avenger films, those are mashups of all these different characters. But just off the solo films, it's one of the best. I know some people put it up there with Winter Soldier and Iron Man 1. I agree. I think it's the best one when a soldier comes in. But certainly a good one. And again, highly recommend that everyone goes out and checks it out. And if you don't get a chance to see it in the theater, okay, fair enough. I understand life gets busy. Be sure to check it out, DVD, Netflix, whatever you can. Or DVD, Netflix, or whatever you can when the time is right. I want to ask you guys this question as we're about to wrap up here. So I just want to make it quick. Got to say that again. So apparently the whole Floyd Mayweather and MMA thing was a big deal. CM Punk's name even came up because of his uncle, Jeff Mayweather, giving an interview saying he might beat CM Punk's ass first. And that got a little bit of steam, not much, but it did get some steam for a couple of days. But apparently, I guess Mayweather's camp is putting out there that he's not going to be doing an MMA bout. Kind of goes out and says, hey, you know, good job, you know, stay in your lane, you know, whatever the case may be. And now he's going to focus on getting back to negotiating with the UFC to discuss his comeback. If this is true and the whole Mayweather MMA ordeal is off the table, how soon do you guys think we might see McGregor back in the octagon? Given we've heard some videos of McGregor from training, do we see maybe sooner than what everyone was thinking? And was he kind of just holding out in case Mayweather was going to get a UFC bout? What are your thoughts on the potential Mayweather return? David, how about you?
Yeah, I only caught about half of what you said there, but I think Floyd Mayweather versus CM Punk is perhaps the most likely thing that's going to happen if Floyd ever steps into the octagon. I know Joe Rogan said something like Floyd has a real chance against CM Punk. And I think he does. I think CM Punk had a real chance against Mickey Gall. I mean, who knows? Really, will the fight even be successful? Do people really want to see Floyd Mayweather? What are you saying?
I understand I might have been cutting off. What I'm saying is, now that the whole Mayweather to MMA is kind of off the table, McGregor said he's going to focus on returning back to MMA sooner and get out to the negotiations. How soon do you think we might see McGregor step in the cage? We know we got the Khabib Tony fight coming up. We see him this summer, end of summer, beginning of fall, end of the year in New York. How soon do you think we might see the Irishman back in the octagon?
Yeah, I think Conor has a pretty big ego. I think they're going to strip Conor of the belt after the weigh-in for Khabib and Tony. And once they strip Conor of the belt, I feel like that's gonna hurt his ego a little bit, and I think that's going to sort of give him a push to come back. I still believe September in Russia against Khabib. I think, if Khabib beats Tony, logically, September in Russia. Conor said it himself a few months ago. Khabib wants it. The fans want it. I think that would make a lot of sense to do it there. I'd like to see him come back sooner. I'd like to see him come back 4th of July weekend here at T-Mobile Arena against the winner of Khabib and Tony. And I feel like if if Tony wins, I think that's more likely to it's more likely to happen sooner than Russia. But if Khabib wins the fight, I think we'll see Conor and Khabib in September in Russia.
Leo, yeah, do you think we might see him back?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with David. I think if Khabib wins, then September in Russia is the absolute fight to make. And I think Conor has been calling for that even before the Tony versus Khabib fight was made official. And if Tony comes out the victor, then we could probably see him a little bit earlier. I don't think it would make sense for the UFC to put Conor versus Tony Ferguson in Russia, although I know that Conor will probably sell out an arena just about anywhere, but it would make a lot more sense to just put it somewhere in Vegas or somewhere in the East Coast, you know, New York City or something. So I think it does depend on who the winner of Khabib and Tony turns out to be, and I think that'll depend on when we see Conor McGregor next. That's if he is going to contend for the lightweight championship. That as David said, I think he will be stripped of that title in the lead up to the title fight. But there's so many options on the table for Conor McGregor. I mean, as we just talked about earlier, Nate Diaz just made a big push for himself yesterday in the eyes of the fans. So that there's still probably that trilogy on the table for Conor McGregor. And now that if he is going to get stripped, it would make a lot more sense for Nate Diaz to step in and have that trilogy fight. But there's always the possibility of a welterweight title fight for Conor McGregor against Tyron Woodley. I mean, there's so many options for him, but if I were a betting man, I would say that it's going to be Conor McGregor returning in September.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at International Fight Week as a possibility, and that is totally based off how Khabib and Tony Ferguson. If he comes out there, you know, fairly healthy, doesn't have a medical suspension that's too long, and is willing to make a turnaround, I think we might see Tony versus Conor at International Fight Week. That's a place where the UFC tries to put Conor at. They try to do it against Aldo. Aldo had to pull out. They try to do it against Diaz a second time, but because he chose to do the press conference, they had to delay it later in the year to 202. So I definitely think International Fight Week could be the first one, but if Khabib wins, and Dana's already said people are in Russia talking with him about doing an event. If Khabib wins, then I think that's when they say Conor to come back in Russia against Khabib. It just makes all sense in the world to do it that way. Either way, though, if we get Conor McGregor back in 2018, that in itself would be worth the wait, because 2017, as good as it was for other fighters, and trust me, we got a lot of good fighters. It did seem that the UFC was missing something without some of the big stars, and Conor McGregor is the biggest star of them all. Guys, it's been a great show, as always. Thank you guys for coming on. Definitely look forward to talking to you guys in the future. For everyone out there listening, be sure to tune in every Monday from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. Also, go to Facebook, All Things Sports. You follow the sports page so that you can catch the archives. Until next week, everybody, enjoy the weekend. Guys, we'll enjoy the fight. Until next Monday, everybody, y'all be easy out there. Peace.
Just Blaze.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby. Killer. All the girls see them. Look at his kicks. Look at his car. All I say is, look, mommy, I'm no good. I'm so hood. Clap at your soldiers. Sober. That leaves after it's over. Killer. I'm not your companion or your man standing. Don't hit me when you wanna get rammed in. I be scrambling with lots of monsters. Shot for lobsters, cops and robbers. Listen, every block is blocker. But she liked the way I diddy bop. You peep that? Make on Maury kicks plus Chanel ski hat. She wants the, so I give her the. Now she screaming out. Killer. She's playing with herself, can't dig it out. Lift her up, Marge, this a fuck, yo. Get it out, pick on us. They want the boy Montana with guns with bandanas. Listen to my homeboy, say it's
Santa. Y'all niggas can't fuck with us, I'm telling ya.